My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Everyone, new episode, new Friday, new stuff happening. This week I've got a returning guest. We've got Idolism Jay on the show. Find all of his links and info in the show notes below. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. I guess I can say gush because I do enjoy it quite a bit, but gush about it in the episode itself. But he's got some great content there. He's got a Final Fantasy series where he's playing through every Final Fantasy game, kind of. His most recent episode was on Chrono Trigger, actually, so that's where the kind of comes from. But 2.5 hours of a cool kind of retrospective look at it, and it's not like overly analytical. It's just done through just cool perspective, just great tone, great balance overall. Cool content, but check it out. He will be on a future episode in coming weeks as well. He is soon to be a new father as well, so wish him well into parenthood. That's likely already happened by the time you're hearing this, so congratulations, Jay. Business as usual, pixelsandpolygons.net. You can find the latest issue of Retro Game Zine. It is the Blaster Master issue with Mike Drucker. You can buy it digitally from Patreon, patreon.com/DarrenHupke/shop. Link in the show notes for that as well. Physically, you can buy the issue, pixelsandpolygons.net. That was a fun issue to put together, and I really love Mike's contribution. It's super cool that a Emmy-nominated comedian, big gaming writer, big-time person is in an issue of something I did. It's doesn't belong. These things don't compute, but I'm super thankful that he participated and wrote something for me. So I hope you all enjoy it, and yeah, tell some friends. Otherwise, continuing to plug away at 32-Bit Library, the Greatest Hits volume. I'm in the downhill. Momentum is feeling good with that. I am telling myself to have it all done from a written standpoint by the end of August. So wish me well there. Then I should have hopefully a Kickstarter for that going up soon. Or not soon, but you know, soon after that production side of stuff is done. I should probably speak it out loud, but the final two issues of Retro Game Zine for the year, 11 and 12, covering Harvest Moon, and I think this is the first official announcement for it, but issue 12, the December issue, will be Snatcher, the Sega CD, well, technically multi-platform, but in the North America, at least, just Sega CD. Those two issues will be coming out, and I'm going to package all the issues up in a single volume. Debating on what I'm calling it, whether it's the 2025 annual or 2025 compendium, or I don't know what it's going to be called technically, but it'll be a way to get all 12 issues in a single volume. That is the thing that I plan to probably reprint and keep going. It will be just the exact same content from the single issues. So if you've been supporting me since the beginning, you're not going to miss out on anything. If you were late to the party and I'm maybe potentially even sold out, though I still do have all the issues, at least at the time of this recording, it'll be a way for you to still be able to get access to all that content. But that's Retro Game Zine, 32-Bit Library, and yeah. Oh, and then Beat 'em Up. Yeah, Beat 'em Up. By the time you're hearing this, it should be launch day? It might be. If you're listening to this on August 8th, this is launch day for Retro Game Zine, which means I'm at the Long Island Retro Gaming Expo, and I'll be hosting a panel on Saturday. So if you're listening to this on launch day, check me out tomorrow at Long Island Retro Gaming Expo talking about Pixels and Polygons. But Beat 'em Up Volume 1 is available. Buy it physically through pixelsandpolygons.net. or Amazon. If you are an international buyer, use your local Amazon URL, and that's the cheapest way to get it shipping-wise. But if you're in the U.S., order it directly from me at pixelsandpolygons.net, and buy it digitally, patreon.com/DarrenHuffy/shop as well. Okay, that covers everything. Congratulations on your baby, Jay. Check out the show notes, subscribe to his YouTube channel, see all the links for my stuff, and listen to an ad from a great Soundstone show. And after the break, listen to our conversation with Jay. Catch y'all next week, y'all. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai Captain Dangerous Parker and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, well, welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am joined this week by a returning guest. It's been a couple weeks and or months. I don't remember the last exactly the date of the last episode you were on, but Idolism J is here. The not just the fighting game fanatic, all game fanatic. Right? That would be the proper description.
Yeah, I guess my fanaticism has kind of expanded. the game fanatic part went on pause during, like, you know, my decade of competition in fighting games. And then once I kind of soft retired, then I got back into, like, regular game stuff again. So, yeah, maybe it's just, you know, fanatic or freak should be the way I'd described.
Freak. Like, Diddy. You know, and his love for parties. you're a freak for video games. Similar thing. Not illegal.
Absolutely.
He didn't necessarily receive any punishment. So clearly, nothing he did was wrong. So it's okay to compare you to him because you're not doing anything wrong either.
Just a quick tangent on kind of the fighting game into video game thing. There's a person I was dating who was. When we were dating, we worked together within the fighting game scene, and after we separated, amicably, we're both very, very good friends. She moved to the West Coast and got into game dev, and over time, I just became friends with a bunch of West Coast game dev people. So now she's seeing me appear on these podcasts and being like, "Why are you on podcasts with my friends? What are you doing in the game dev scene? Why are you following me?" I'm like, "No, I kind of expanded the same way you expanded."
That's funny. What a weird coincidence. Let's get into some this or that's then. You want to jump into, actually no, hold on, before we do that, your YouTube channel, I want to put a link to it in the show notes so people can kind of find that and subscribe to that. You had been working on a massive Chrono Trigger episode, and like you had shared about it. We're in a private Discord chat, you know, that kind of is ongoing. So like, you know, you had been talking about it for a while, but clearly you were working on that for a long time.
Very long time.
Yeah, and then you just posted your 2006 video, which I just finished up the other day. How frequent do you post there? Because I realize I've got to just get you in my algorithm so that I make sure that, you know, the new video has come up. But your YouTube content is fantastic. Yeah. So what can you share about your YouTube channel, and what would people want to know about it if they haven't already seen you?
Well, it's about to go on break because as we record this, I'm like 5 days away from having my first child. So I'm about to go on a bit of a break to take care of a tiny potato that needs like guiding and parenting to live. But predominantly my YouTube channel is a bit of, I describe it as non-review video game topics. So I try not to be a review site. I try to talk about games in themes or topics regarding to games instead of just reviewing games themselves. Sometimes they do loop around into reviews, but I try to be a bit more nuanced than just, is this game good or is this game bad? The kind of big pull that my site has, or my channel has had lately, is I'm doing a series called Playing Every Final Fantasy Kinda, and that has hit Final Fantasy VI, but also, as you mentioned, it has hit Chrono Trigger, which is the first big example of where Playing Every Final Fantasy, comma, kinda comes into. And that's kind of been more things that has taken off for the channel. It's also the thing I probably put the most amount of effort into. These videos are quite big. And the 2006 video you mentioned, I kind of do a wrap-up video every year called Gaming in the Current Year. That's just describing what I played this year. It's kind of bits and pieces. The 2006 video kind of came across because I've been playing a bunch of early PS3 games, and so I kind of spun that into its own thing. And that is just kind of a fun reminder that 7th gen does actually suck. Even though it's sometimes good, it does mostly suck.
Yeah, I was right there in the thick of things, getting my $600 PS3 on launch day, getting my Talladega Nights Blu-ray packed in with it, you know, and enjoying this brand new medium.
The one game PS3 has, Talladega Nights.
Yeah. Watching your, you know, the on that video, like talking about like Resistance and Heavenly Sword and things, like I shared it in the chat, but like I remember the gaps in between those releases, like of launch and playing Resistance, and it just not being this polished, like truly like definitive reason as to why the PS3 needed to exist for entertainment value. It was just like a good 7 out of 10 thing. If you want to be like, you know, lean positively on it, you know, that'd be a stretch. But then like getting Heavenly Sword, Lair, and things like that were like months in between. And so people were just stuck waiting on like multi-console, like multi-platform, like things like NBA Street, Home Court, or, you know, like sports titles. Like there was just this drought of games, and the games that we were sprinkled and fed were just like not great examples. Like
not
they were
good.
Like visual showcases in the form of like if you were looking at screenshots in magazines and imagining what they would play like, but you could almost just flip the pages of a magazine to like recreate the frame rates of a lot of the games. And it was crazy how different it is. Like now you have options to ensure that your performance is prioritized rather than just some of the fidelity issues that so many of those early PS3 games in that generation of games just like leaned the opposite direction into.
And I kind of mentioned it in the video, but something you pointed out there, like, oh, you see the screenshots and like magazines, like this is the era where those are dolled up and doctored. Like those aren't even accurate on many occasions. So like so much of like the kickstart of the PS3 was really just embarrassing. Like that's not like a better word for it. Like embarrassing is the way to describe it.
Well, I had the 60 gigabyte, you know, backwards compatible unit, so I was still able to go back and play some, you know, great PS2 games that I was still catching up on while I was in that drought of original PS3 content and everything. So I managed to make it work. And I had that little hatch I can open up and consider buying a compact flash card to import photos into my cross media bar for absolutely no reason. So there was things and wonder that I had in this system that, you know, never were fully ever realized at all by any means whatsoever. Okay, and then one more plug. That Final Fantasy series is really cool, too. I've started to watch them in order, and your earliest ones, I mean, as the games kind of grow in scope, obviously they grow from there, but, like, you know, you have a pretty good runtime for them, but as the games go on, those runtimes just get, you know, bigger and bigger for your videos, and it's just fun, like, you know, to hear your, like, thoughts and opinions, like, mixed in that, you know, it's an analysis, but through, like, the voice of a real person enjoying and playing these games, not like done up in a way that's like an educational like thesis or anything like that at all. Not to say it's dumb or anything, but like I don't know, your voice and tone just fits like this kind of everyman of gaming, but like still like through like the study of like a critical analysis and everything. So it strikes just the right balance. And what's the runtime on the Chrono Trigger video? Like it's insane.
It's 2 hours 38 minutes, and that's like shorter by almost an hour from the Final Fantasy VI one, because the Final Fantasy VI one's 3 hours and 34 minutes.
Yeah, so I mean, right there, two videos you have of 6 hours of content you can watch instead of other garbage you're probably wasting
really
time watching.
It's like the first Final Fantasy one's like 18 minutes, and then the second Final Fantasy immediately balloons to 1 hour and 3. Like, it's just after Final Fantasy, because I wrote a ton for Final Fantasy one, and then I chopped all of it because I was like, this actually isn't entertaining to like describe Final Fantasy one this way in this detail. It's actually better to be short and brief about it. But like, once you get to two, then I think the gloves just come off. And yeah, I really, really love the series. Like, once I did three, once I wrapped three, I was like, this is my priority now. I have multi-spanning ideas for all of this. I have a map for everything, a flowchart, if you will. Like, I've planned this out for years and years and years now.
Yeah, that's cool. And then you get into a good golden era of it, going into, you know, 4, 5, and 6, and then the PlayStation generation, which I biasly favor as well. And then
that's same.
Yeah. So you got a lot of great stuff on the way. Plus, baby Jay. Which will be that's always good. I have three children myself, so I know the life of parenthood and everything, and you'll find a good balance, hopefully, in a couple of weeks, months, years, whatever it may be, to get back into the groove of things.
It'll be great to play video games again after a while, but we'll see.
I still manage to I think those first couple of months figuring things out, you know, is one thing, but then you'll find your groove. You know, it works. But cool. You want to jump into some this or that's then and get
gladly
going?
Let's do it.
All right. Turn-based or real-time?
Turn-based. Frame one answer. It's like that one's pretty immediate. Real-time strategy games are cool, but I love a turn-based game.
Okay. Attack or defend?
Attack. That's the only way through is forward. Defense never gets you. Defense does not win you battles.
Okay. Action RPG or strategy RPG?
I will go action RPG. I think I will go action RPG on that. Just because I actually think I like the idea of strategy RPGs more, but I've played so many less.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Handheld or TV?
This is a really complicated question because I love sitting down at the TV, but just at this point in my life, I don't have time for it. Even pre-child, like cutting out a part of my day where I can sit in front of the TV to play a game is very difficult. And because of that, like, handhelds have become like very, very critical for me. Not to mention, I do think a lot of the handhelds that have been released throughout the years are just some of the most important parts of gaming, like the Game Boy, the DS, the PSP. Those are hallmarks. I mean, the GBA, even, like, all those things are just so important to video games.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, DLC or sequel?
Sequel all day long. Yeah, and, fighting games will give me DLC characters, which is nice, but I do actually like the iterative model that, like, Street Fighter 2 gets criticized for. I would prefer the iterative model of, like, here's a new soft sequel, a new, like, improvement sequel, instead of just straight DLC.
Mm-hmm. And then last one, let's do this one, since you've kind of mentioned some of these already. Game Boy Advance or 3DS?
Oh, Game Boy Advance. I think actually Game Boy Advance kind of takes it with a lap around it, because the 3DS I fell off of pretty badly. That's like kind of Nintendo's flop era a little bit. Like, the 3DS itself is a freakishly cool machine. I was able to score the limited edition Majora's Mask. I remember being at work and like hiding away at my retail job, being like, ah, shit, it's going up. I got to make sure I can secure this. And as a like handheld, I think that I think it's like the new 3DS XL, the Majora's Mask limited edition. It is an incredible piece of hardware, but it was Nintendo's flop era, if there ever was one, and it just didn't put out anything I felt interested in.
Yeah, there was, what was I playing at the end? Like Shin Megami Tensei 4, like all those Street Pass games. Like, there was things that I was like...
The Street Pass is the thing that sells that. I love Street Pass.
Yeah, I loved all of that stuff. I've actually wanted them to bring that back with the Switch, and, you know...
Too.
And
so
it was, yeah, when it wasn't there, I thought for sure, like, hey, well, the Switch 2, they could do that, you know? Like, people are carrying this thing around. Why not have just this technology there? Even if you don't use it, like, let it be in there so that people can dabble into it. But, Yeah, I guess
that was
not
my big Switch 2, like, you know, long shot like desire was like, please bring back Street Pass functionality. You know, these things are mobile enough. People like from the I can understand maybe not putting it in the Switch because maybe from the get you don't know exactly how mobile these things are going to be. But once the Switch hit, it was everywhere. It's just like the idea that you could play Legend of Zelda, a full fledged Legend of Zelda on the go, I think immediately resonated, and it never left that how mobile the Switch is. And I really, really hope that one day Street Pass comes back on the Switch 2.
On the new Switch 2, just like the new 3DS.
Yeah, you gotta bust out the Unicode that people were using on Twitter at the time, so you can have the little, like, you know, little sparkle lines around new.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's this or that. Let's throw an icebreaker at you, and then we'll jump into the main content. What is your favorite time period or setting of a game?
Oh, wow. My gut is to say something vaguely like soft sci-fi. Because I think I resonate with sci-fi stuff more. And it's hard to say that, or like, it's hard to put that as the answer, because so much of everything I've played is like fantasy based. Again, like, being a gamer of a certain age and era, like, so much is fantasy. You got your Final Fantasies, you got your Dragon Quests, you got a million platformers on the NES that are all warrior of legend and his sword or battle axe, you know. But when games have that kind of soft sci-fi, like, I don't really want need like a hard cyberpunk sci-fi, but like, I do think Guilty Gear is probably a good example of like a softer sci-fi. I mean, not even softer. That's a very complicated and complex game, but like, it's a game where like, what is magic and what is science? Maybe that difference doesn't really matter, if that makes sense.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. I think part of it too, it's trying to think about it more, because I do like the sci-fi edge of things. For sure. Maybe it's because I have played so much fantasy based things that I like it when it's like, you know, different or the unexpected, you know, giving me like mechanics and things that would easily fit within a fantasy world, but like now done in just this environment, I think is like unique enough. But also, it's been years now that there's a balance between both those things. So they both exist. But I definitely lean, I think, into, if I'm leaning somewhere, it's in the sci-fi side of things for sure, too.
Yeah, I like that. Middle groundish zone where like things can be a little more complex and a little more industrial and a little more, you know, scientific or magical, but I don't need it to go full-blown cyberpunk. I don't need it to be tech revolutionary. Those things sometimes I feel like I can get a little lost in them, like Shadowrun games that came out, if I'm gonna guess at like 7-8 years ago, they're fine, but sometimes I feel like the terminology that justifies how cyberpunky they are just kind of washes over me.
Gotcha. Okay, well, let's get into the main topic at hand then. I sent you my list. You picked two questions. We're actually going to record two episodes, spoiler alert. That's how I always do it.
They're not done with me yet.
Let's answer this question though here. Is there a game you quote unquote missed? You know, one that maybe you know won't stand up today if you tried it, but if you had potentially experienced it during its original release, you know, you would have enjoyed. This is an oddly framed question. I also think you're the first person to answer this one. But yeah, is there a game you feel you missed?
Yeah, and I do like this question because I think a lot of people see it and they're like, oh, I missed a game when it was relevant, and I missed an older game when it was relevant, and I can't go back. And I don't think that's always true. I think you can go back to games pretty easily if you have enough of the knowledge of like what time and life was like in gaming back then to kind of put yourself in those shoes and see a game for what it is instead of what it is now. But my answer is Diablo 2, and that's because internet connectivity was not where it needed to be for me to play that. You know, a lot of games could kind of come in here, like any MMO, WoW or previous, but like when Diablo 2 came out, I was aware of it, and I definitely didn't have a good enough PC for it. I was just dinking around with like my Windows 98 still that we just had. I had one kicking in my room, but there was no way I could play Diablo 2, and there was absolutely no way I could play Diablo 2 online. So I missed out on what really makes that game special, because in the time since, I've tried to like play Diablo 2 and I never get very far and I always kind of drop it, not for really any fault of the game itself, but like those attempts at playing the game, that does not really sell me on what makes Diablo 2 so magical. Because when I hear people talk about it, they're always talking about this like late game online grinding for equipments that I think became more of the modern like loot style of games today. But there was no world where I could have ever seen that back then. And now I just don't think I could ever go back to it. Just like physically, would I ever have the time or ability to be able to play old Diablo 2s online as it was intended and like get it the way that so many people still talk about, like, oh my god, Diablo 2, you had to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I had to look up the release date to confirm, but June of 2000 is when it was originally released.
Oh yeah, there's no fucking way.
Yeah. I would have been getting out of like junior high, and you know, that would have been the summertime, and then going into like my freshman year at high school. I had two friends who had internet connected computers and households and things like that, and they definitely played this a ton. And while I did have off and on again access to the internet at home, it wasn't consistent enough, nor was that computer like something I could use to like play games on or anything. I used it for to chat, you know, with friends, you know, using AOL mm-hmm. Instant Messenger, making sure I signed online and was able to talk to Superpunk 666 and various friends across the internet. And I think I used it to like buy tickets from Ticketmaster. I think I started to come of age where I was like buying tickets to go to shows and all that stuff as well too. But otherwise, no gaming was had, and I was super jealous of my friends, because when we get together or when we'd be at school, they would be just like, you know, fiending to like just be at home again and playing more. And they were like, oh yeah, like you know, getting online and like dropping loot to each other and like, you know, going through like end game like runs of these dungeons to like a chance to get certain equipment and things like that. And it was like this game that sounded so fantastical in my head, like I absolutely want to play that, and like just not being able to. So like I would just try and actively ignore it as much as I could too, because everything about it sounded like rad, like being able to play with a friend and like battle like bosses and go through this progressive challenge of it all, like on paper, like that's totally like right up my alley. But I was unable to do it at the time of its original release and everything, and I've never gone back myself.
Yeah, I think after like Diablo 2 hit, and I knew some people, like I was kind of too young to ever be playing that game when it came out anyways, but it's not like its notoriety faded over the next like 4 or 5 years, so like I was still hearing about it. Like I would play StarCraft 2, I would play StarCraft with people in a LAN setting, but I never could really have consistent online to play that. And I think Warcraft 3 was like the first time I could get like my laptop that I had that was powerful enough to run Warcraft 3. I could go to friends' houses to like get internet there and play on things online. That's kind of like the first real like big online like Blizzard experience I got to have. And by the time that happens, like Diablo 2 is kind of already in the rear view, so it's just something I can't go back to. You know, physically I could, sure, I could find like a private server, but to have experienced what that game meant to people and the influences that it laid down, I just don't think there's a way for me to actually go back to see it.
Yeah, I think this is such a great game for this question, because it, like, yes, we technically have the access to play it. Like, our technologies, you know, I mean, there's even that Diablo 2 Resurrected that they released, you know, that remastered version of it.
Right.
Like, it's entirely possible to play this game, but not, like, within the framework of, you know, this you know, early internet connected gaming scene and like what, you know, you and your friends would have been doing, you know, in those moments and everything. Like, plus these games like iterated on themselves already, like Diablo 3 and 4 and everything, like took these concepts and evolved them. I played Diablo 3 you know, quite a bit years later and everything, and you know, that was like whatever 10 years after this game came out, and you know, found some entertainment and joy out of it. But I think everybody, you know, does not compare those exactly apples to apples to how that Diablo 2 game was. And it's crazy is I ended up working at a game store in like 2005 and then into like all the way into like 2011, maybe as late as 2012. Actually, I think it wasn't 2012, but even though PC games would like sales like slowly sold, like slowed and dwindled from a physical space, like Diablo 2 and StarCraft from Blizzard were just like constant sellers. Like there was just like this double pack thing with Diablo 2 and Lords of Destruction.
Like the battle chests, they would release those games as battles, because that's how I got the StarCraft one. I got the Warcraft one that way. And those were so economically priced.
Yeah, I think they're like $20 or something like that.
And it was like, it was like $20.
And like those were evergreen. Like those would sell into like a decade after its release. And I mean, that's the design of like old Blizzard. Like they would make a game and like iterate on it, even like through the expansions and things like that. But like they would make a game, even if it meant it was delayed and everything, or took longer than they needed to take to do it, but in hopes that a higher quality thing would give this evergreen of like a sales experience and work out for them in the end. And I think for sure, I'd love to know like ultimate like end game sales numbers for this thing, but like guaranteed it like paid for itself 10 times over from a developmental cost standpoint.
They were so successful. Like it's just, it was impossible to not have access to those games at a certain point. Like if you wanted to play them, you had the ability.
Yeah. Did you ever play the later Diablo games? Did you ever get like 3 or 4 or anything?
Never. Yeah. I've actually never gotten around to playing any Diablos now. You know, Diablo 2 was always the one I wanted to, but I never, never really had the urge to pick up 3 or 4.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like, I don't know that Blizzard is the same Blizzard, obviously, that put out Warcraft 3, Diablo 2, and everything. But clearly they're not. But yeah, that was definitely, it was a different Eric. So, I mean, what you are playing now is like, you know, husks of like the same framework of these franchises and everything. But yeah, one of those games, I guess you kind of had to be there. And it sounds like both of us wanted to be there, but just could not be. But that's fun. Well, that's it. We answered the question. Actually, that is the show. That is the episode. Would you like to plug anything else? Like I said, I'll put your YouTube channel in the show notes below as well. But anything else you'd like people to know to either find you on social media or check out of yours that you'd like to share?
No, that's pretty much it. Like the YouTube is the primary function. You'll find my Blue Sky there. Blue Sky. So it's a idolismj@yace.world. Yeah. However, Blue Sky's funky thing is, but it's all up there if you need to find me through my other means. It's really just the YouTube's the main one.
Cool. Well, I'll have that there. Y'all should check that out. Get a subscribe. Hours of content, even with this impending hiatus for Child, you have plenty to catch up on and enjoy while things get, you know, moving and grooving in your life in the background there. But thank you, Jay. We will be immediately recording another episode after this, so you'll hear more from Jay in a few weeks. But in the real world, he'll be on baby duty. So, you know, we'll hopefully down the road have you back on the show once you get in a good spot there too as well.
If you're hearing this, I'm not sleeping.
Yes, and that's 100% true. You will not be sleeping. Sleep when the baby sleeps.
I already have a terrible, terrible time sleeping. I'm getting like a sleep test very soon for like a CPAP. I'm sure.
Oh boy. Fun. All right. But thank you, Jay. We will catch you in a little bit.
All right. See you later.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary cultural and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.